11 episode, Hierarchy, the Basis of Development. On weekdays, big cities resemble anthills. A countless number of people crowd the streets. The pursuit of scattered goals, the hustle and worries do not allow people to reflect on their own lives even for a minute. Only a few of them have realized that true happiness is not built from money, career advancement, and the modern comforts of civilization. Encountering the keeper of knowledge on their path, these individuals seriously turned towards truth and decided to change not only their lives, but also to play a part in the revival of the spiritual culture of all humanity. Today, these chosen ones have gathered in a small park where, hidden in the shade of coniferous trees, as if by a miracle appeared a spacious hall with wide windows and a semicircular transparent roof. The hall was spacious and slightly cool. Soft evening light permeated the entire space. Along the walls and in the middle of the hall, there were hundreds of chairs, gradually getting occupied. All eyes were focused on a stage-like structure where a magnificent chair was prepared, intended for the keeper of knowledge. Despite this, only a few of those present could answer when and how he appeared before them. The appearance of the keeper of knowledge was like a mystery, allowing chosen ones to contemplate it while hiding it from others in an incomprehensible way for the average mind. Traditionally, the meeting began with a prayer. The master's quiet but penetrating voice, his unique ability to completely experience every unique moment of existence, and the sacred words of the prayer passed through the centuries by the most conscious representatives of humanity and revitalized by the keeper, helped people tune into the understanding of truth, freeing the heart and mind for new knowledge. After the prayer, the main part began, during which the disciples could ask the keeper all their questions, to which only he could provide clear answers. The first to speak was a young guy who, along with a few other disciples, entered the hall last. They arrived much earlier, but stopped near the entrance of the temple, drawn in a lively conversation. Entering the hall, they sat next to each other, near the window, evidently intending to continue the discussion, but now with the keeper of knowledge.
Dear Master, please tell us, what is service?
The question was asked on behalf of the entire group. It was evident that this topic had been fervently discussed by them before Darshan. Everyone froze, awaiting the answer. The question turned out to be so relevant for everyone that some even jumped in their seats, expressing either surprise or annoyance for being preempted with the question. Sensing the audience's enthusiasm, the master invited the disciples who had shown emotions to express their understanding of the word service.
I believe that behind this word lies the help to people,
immediately responded a red-haired girl sitting in the second row. She already knew her weakness, superficiality, and it became evident that, after giving the answer, she began to reflect on whether her help to people was indeed superficial, because she didn't understand very well what exactly her assistance to people could consist of.
Rather, it's doing a task that is not personally needed for you, and maybe you don't even know its true purpose,
said a middle-aged man with thick mustaches. Feeling misunderstood, he immediately clarified his words.
That is, you do what you were asked without asking why it's necessary.
Judging by the puzzled looks, he again felt the need to explain.
It depends on who is asking, of course. For example, when the conductor of power asks without explaining the details, and you just need to quickly complete the task without unnecessary questions.
The audience relaxed, and those who had already helped the conductors of power in their city nodded in agreement, understanding the example given. Those who had not yet had such an honor expressed a desire to attract such valuable experience into their lives.
Or maybe service means giving without asking for anything in return,
suggested a short girl with a thick braid. In her voice, there was a deep inner strength, which, out of habit, was afraid to attract the attention of the overwhelming environment, but was already making timid attempts to blossom fully under the patronage of the keeper. who endowed her with a warm gaze.
Maybe the meaning of service is sublime emotions and strong states that can be experienced only when doing something necessary for people?
Responded a man with a distinct Baltic accent.
In the West, they instill in us the understanding that we should try to do everything only for our own benefit. For you and your family to have everything. But such values do not bring strong states, only fatigue, aggression, and disappointment.
After a short pause, he continued, struggling to find the right words and maintaining pauses.
So, I believe that service is an idea opposite to Western philosophy. When the focus is on other people, not yourself.
Hearing these words, the keeper expressed pleasant surprise at such deep understanding from the disciple. Then, with a wide, childlike smile, he said,
In families, children are initially raised as egoists, starting with not allowing them to share candies, toys with other children,
he said, with an uncompromising tone.
And they are taught to be blatant egoists. Often people don't even realize that any action done only for oneself only strengthens selfishness.
And what's wrong with that?
A respectable-looking man, who clearly found himself in such a situation for the first time and was embarrassed by what he heard, didn't understand.
Egoism is dangerous because it separates us from God.
The master said with love. All disciples looked at him with surprise, awaiting explanations. Only now did they emotionally grasp the importance and seriousness of the discussed topic.
A person who focuses their attention only on themselves distances themselves from God, from people, and from all existence.
The master continued his explanations.
They become like a finger that suddenly decides to isolate itself from the hand, as well as from the entire body.
The keeper raised his hand and skillfully wrapped one of the fingers, tightly tightening a silk cord. The finger whitened before the astonished disciples' eyes, much like the faces of the most concerned girls, ready to jump from their seats to save the precious master. But the keeper was even willing to sacrifice himself, awakening lively emotions in the listeners, making the impression of knowledge unforgettable.
Such people become parasites, closed, stewing in their own juice of egoism.
Everyone present immediately felt uncomfortable, recognizing numerous manifestations of selfishness in themselves. The master noticed this and continued his speech in a softer tone, but in a way that his words would remain in the heart of each.
Therefore, we must realize that actions done in the interest of oneself contribute to the strengthening of our egoism. And this is very bad, primarily for ourselves, because if I remain an egoist, besides negative thoughts and emotions, nothing else remains for me. Constant worrying about oneself and one's comfort only brings anxiety and constant dissatisfaction.
The keeper's finger clearly was not experiencing the best times. The connection with the organism that sustained the life of the cells in it was severed. Each moment of delay threatened to turn the process of dying into an irreversible event. Bringing the tension to the limit, the master nodded to the assistant, who rushed to him with miniature scissors and cut the tightly embedded thread. The hall gasped in relief, taking a breath of release from the dead grip of suffocating selfishness, guided by the will of the great. Without restraining emotions, people applauded, laughed, loudly expressing gratitude to the keeper for such a vivid performance, which gave a deep understanding of the irreversible harm that can be caused by following selfish thinking.
Is that why egotists have only fears and phobias in their minds? Because they don't see anything good around them?
A tall woman in a strict business suit joined the conversation, pointing sympathetically at the now purple finger of the master.
Yes, an egoist parasitizes on everyone nearby,
the keeper continued firmly, refusing the attempts of assistance to offer a cold compress for the injured finger.
And thus, in his soul, hell is created, and he gradually turns into a demon.
The master's words frightened everyone present because each, to some extent, took them upon themselves. For a few minutes, the disciples sat in silence with lowered eyes, reflecting on their own lives and actions. The Master looked at them attentively, allowing them to fully comprehend this information so that it would penetrate their minds and souls and remain there forever. Perhaps this question was on the lips of everyone present, but it was the young fair-haired guy sitting by the wide-open window who asked it first.
Oh, great Master, tell us how to live so as not to allow egoism into our souls? How to learn to serve? Not just do something thoughtlessly, especially for the conductors of power?
These words were spoken with such sincerity that the Master joyfully smiled.
The main thing is, you must understand that you need to do everything for people. Give yourselves to people. Help everyone.
The Master spoke energetically, articulating each word clearly, reinforcing them with gestures and unique facial expressions.
When a person opens their soul to others, begins to act not only for themselves, but for the benefit of those around them, the highest states come to them, and bright thoughts appear in their minds. And then the soul feels good. Good.
Emanated from the Master's mouth and filled the entire space. It felt like the energy accumulated by his selfless service was enough to stop all violence, eliminate all ignorance, and heal all suffering, if it were God's will. But by God's will, only those capable of making their efforts towards development could accept the Keeper's help. Here, the Keeper held a small pause, generously endowing the disciples with the subtlest energy. He saw how their determination to change their thinking and entire lives strengthened. Then he continued.
As soon as you stop inflating the bubble of egoism, your merging with God and with existence will begin. And the soul will immediately feel good because from this moment on, your soul will feel the approach of heaven.
The listeners were struck by the words spoken. In the eyes of many, tears of joy sparkled. Illuminated by the new truth, they sat still, contemplating the face of the wisest among humans and letting the received knowledge enter their hearts. Knowledge was transforming them now. In this fleeting moment of eternity, the subtle bodies of the disciples shone with purity, and each gained confidence that a new life, full of love and service to others, awaited them. For some time, an incredible silence filled the hall, as if by the will of the Keeper. The hall had moved from the city to the Himalayas. Intrusive thoughts, worries, and anxieties retreated, giving way to a space of silence and meditation. However, this state was only briefly accessible to most disciples, so the Master suggested continuing the conversation. A raised hand belonged to an elderly man in a gray suit, holding a cane. He sat far enough from the Master, speaking quietly with his eyes lowered to the floor. However, in the prevailing silence, every word he spoke was distinctly heard.
Master, tell us, how do we learn to understand hierarchy if no one has taught us? We all come from a society where everyone is on the same level, even workers and bosses.
The Keeper of Knowledge looked at the man and spoke, conveying an uncompromising attitude toward the situation.
In fact, it's a strange society where everyone is on the same level. This is how Western society is built. The communists wanted everyone to be equal, and as a result, everyone became equally foolish, equally poor, and equally zombified.
The Master made a short pause and continued his explanations.
If society develops normally, according to its natural laws, there can be no equality. There will always be someone smarter and someone less intelligent, someone stronger and someone weaker.
The conversation was joined by a tall young guy named Michael with mischievous freckles on his face, giving him a certain childlike charm.
But isn't it good when there is no equality? Typically, under the idea of universal unity, people start to equalize not with those who are smarter, but with those who are dumber. After all, there are always more ignorant people.
The Master listened carefully to his words and nodded approvingly.
Yes, indeed,
he confirmed.
When everyone strives to be on the same level, people become more ignorant and limited. and such a society quickly degenerates and deteriorates.
Does it mean that hierarchy helps people develop?
Michael asked, rejoicing at the sudden clarity that came to him.
That's correct, since hierarchy breeds healthy competition.
The master clapped his hands, awakening the listeners. A few chosen ones felt that he was recalling with visible pleasure amusing episodes from the lives of close disciples and the conditions created by him for their development. Such settlements were established around the world for the most ambitious and those ready to give themselves entirely to the hands of the master.
And to move to a higher level, a person must develop. This is a very powerful incentive for development in a normal society.
And the fact that a person has moved from one level to another when he became more developed than others? Is that also a manifestation of hierarchy? It turns out that inequality is not at all a violation of anyone's rights and freedoms, but an engine of progress, the basis of our development.
Michael beamed with joy at the sudden understanding.
Yes, inequality is a completely normal phenomenon,
the keeper confirmed.
Only a more developed person can organize others, lead them. And when all people are on the same level, society becomes disorganized. People lose the incentive for development, and along with it, the meaning of life.
A particular interest was noticeably felt from some of the listeners, dressed in orange clothing, part of the inner circle. For them, the discussion about hierarchy was necessary, like air, to understand what was happening to them.
It turns out that normal interaction between people is always based on some hierarchy, and it is the foundation of any healthy society, isn't it?
A surprised young disciple asked.
Yes, and any attempts to make all people equal lead either to universal degradation or to mass conflicts. Because when people are disorganized, chaos and confusion begin around, and this is a direct path to war.
The Keeper of Knowledge said the last words particularly energetically, so that each disciple could feel how dangerous the absence of hierarchy is. Another older disciple, expressing extreme interest through her appearance, but seemingly hesitant to speak in public, caught the Master's attentive gaze. He smiled at her, removing the fear of expressing her thoughts in public.
Master, do angels have their hierarchy? After all, they are the highest form of existence.
Just a couple of years ago, this obedient disciple headed the Department of Theoretical Mechanics at the university. The master smiled at this intriguing question and promptly continued her thought.
Yes, indeed. There's a simple angel, an archangel, cherubim, seraphim, and so on. Angelic hierarchy exists. Angels have hierarchy because each angel is at a certain stage of proximity to the deity. And if there were no hierarchy, a demon and an angel would be on the same level, and there would be no significant differences between them. And that would be the end of everything in the world.
What was heard sparked a storm of emotions among the disciples because the Keeper of Knowledge had just allowed them to taste the life of the highest level of existence to which they were only beginning to aspire.
Master, did I see correctly that the Sansrol Pyramid clearly shows how hierarchy is built?
Natalia continued, and seeing approval in the Master's manifestations, continued with enthusiasm.
So why not convey it to the masses of people and our leaders so that they look, study, and build a society based on natural laws? So that everyone understands that living without hierarchy is impossible?
Yes, of course, it's very foolish to think that equalization can lead to anything good,
confirmed the Keeper of Knowledge. And the recent historical experience of our country clearly shows this. The communists claimed that they wanted to make everyone equally wealthy, but instead, they made everyone equally poor, foolish, and meaningless. As a result, people lost the need to strive for something, work diligently, and develop. And it didn't lead to anything good.
And when there is hierarchy, does society build harmoniously?
Michael intervened again.
Yes,
confirmed the master, smiling.
Hierarchy arises naturally. That's how the world is arranged. Therefore, only hierarchy allows society to develop normally, and true harmony lies in it, as you correctly noticed.
Michael was pleased with the master's praise, but observing how it inflated the soap bubble of his self-esteem, he restrained himself and humbly bowed, thanking the master for understanding. The master was already waiting for the next question, and dozens of hands rose into the air, eager to get answers. The master suggested addressing a woman named Tara, sitting by the wall. She was quite small, plump, but agile. Bright pink blush and a lively gaze made her look more like a teenager than an adult woman. She spoke vividly and loudly, trying to choose words so that her question was clear to everyone in the hall.
Master, did I understand you correctly that observing hierarchy is already a condition for our development? Because to exist in a system of inequality, one must learn to listen, obey, and work on many other qualities within oneself, right?
Of course, one needs to work on yourself.
The Keeper of Knowledge nodded affirmatively, clearly seeing the prejudices that hindered the disciple from truly embarking on the path of development.
Firstly, hierarchy arises when we observe ourselves and others, understanding that someone is higher in terms of self-control, awareness, readiness to change, while someone is lower, succumbs to any impulse, falls under provocations of the dark, allows negative emotions, and even defends all this wealth.
He continued his explanations without any didactic tone. The disciples froze in amazement, as if the Keeper of Knowledge had unfolded a bright illustration of their lives before them. One of the youngest disciples dared to share her observations.
Master, in our settlement, we strive to become better, to develop, to grow. This means that we also submit to the hierarchy you define, right? Right now, I'm here. On one step, then, I hope, I'll grow. And now, someone on a higher step helps me to grow, helps me to develop. Naturally, only when we listen to those who are higher, older, it allows us to develop, become better than we are now. And vice versa, if we don't listen to those higher in the hierarchy, then whom do we listen to? Stupid attitudes and implanted programs that live inside us without our consent?
A wave of understanding and sublime emotions swept over Tara.
But then, we'll make mistakes, commit sins everywhere, as happens when someone falls into arbitrariness. Immediately, there are many stupid mistakes, accidents, troubles, and self-destruction begins in us when we start listening only to ourselves and not to those who are older and higher in the hierarchy. Does this especially apply to the spiritual hierarchy you define? Because you clearly see who among us is in a better state and who can really help others, and who, despite their status in society, should accept help with gratitude.
Exactly,
confirmed the Keeper of Knowledge.
Therefore, only by listening to those higher in the hierarchy, asking for advice from the Master, can we bring our thoughts in order and achieve harmony. And then we ourselves begin to develop.
Tara, overwhelmed by enthusiasm, covered her face with her hands and laughed freely and joyfully. The desire to join the conversation was expressed again by a guy with a Baltic appearance named Edgar.
Master, abroad, the most painful topic is precisely hierarchy. You were talking about the hierarchy of angels just now. This is a whole layer of knowledge on which one should rely when building a normal society.
Here he paused for a moment, pondering whether it would be appropriate to say what he was thinking. Gaining courage, he finished.
But demons also have their hierarchy. Can it also be considered an example of development?
A wave of embarrassment swept through the hall, as if people were uncomfortable with Edgar's question. But the Keeper of Knowledge could never be stumped by a question. As for him, all levels of existence were open, and he made no distinction between good and evil.
We talked about how harmful the ideas of equalization are, but to which hierarchy you belong also turns out to be no less important. In the demonic hierarchy, there are roles too: demons, various imps, vampires, and they all occupy a certain place in this hierarchy. But it is by no means possible to equalize oneself with such a value system. Among us, there are also bad hierarchies, where people measure themselves by their cruelty, selfishness, and other spiritual deformities. But rejecting such a system does not mean that stupid equalization can be better. After all, with universal equality, there is no development. All people become equal to the foolish, limited, lazy ones.
Edgar was quite satisfied with this answer. He sat back in his place and pondered the master's words. Meanwhile, Tara raised her hand again. She spoke quickly and very emotionally, slightly stumbling and confusing her words.
Master, may I ask how to properly build my communication with those who stand higher than me on the hierarchical ladder in the spiritual environment? And how should I react if I understand that this person is committing an offense? Maybe even a very serious one.
She paused for a moment, but then continued just as quickly.
A very negative evaluation turns on inside me, so it's hard to reset myself. At that moment, two forces are fighting within me. One understands that I shouldn't judge the higher-ranking sister, and the other still starts experiencing negative emotions.
You don't need to judge,
the master said calmly.
It's better to tell someone from the higher ranks in our hierarchy about what happened. To get timely help, every disciple always has a direct phone number for all seniors. It's not like reaching the president in society, for example.
All the disciples listened to the keeper with genuine interest, thanking God that the inner life of the circle close to the master had been revealed to them. Lack of information unconsciously scares a person. And now, thanks to Tara's honest question and the absolutely sincere answer from the master, each disciple gained a clearer perspective on their spiritual path. The disciples, for whom the discussed topic was already an integral part of life, paid attention to every word of the master.
Or you can try to explain your position to the person yourself. After all, each of us can be wrong in something. We should strive to help others become better, not just condemn each other. But simply expressing negative emotions unconsciously won't help either the person or the common cause.
So, criticism is still necessary for the common cause to be performed more successfully, and a person can see their mistakes? And if my words carry no negativity nor condemnation, can I express my opinion even towards someone higher in the hierarchy if I believe it will help the common cause?
Tara asked, pondering the teacher's words.
Of course. And if a person cares about the common cause with their soul and is indifferent to the fate of another person, then expressing their feelings without negativity is already a constructive action that helps everyone become better.
Having said this, the master looked at Tara and she smiled, illuminated by a beam of new understanding. At that moment, a new question arose in her mind, and she hurried to voice it.
Master, tell me, to prevent the manifestation of negative emotions, should I pass what happened not through feelings, but through understanding? In other words, explain everything that happened first to myself. Form my own intellectual assessment, right?
Tara tried to formulate the question that had just arisen in her mind as clearly as possible. She feared that she might not be able to express it clearly. But seeing the approving glance of the wisest, she calmed down and prepared to listen to the answer to her question, which came immediately.
Yes, understanding should always come first, that we are all human and it's natural for all of us to make mistakes,
the master calmly began.
But that doesn't mean that a person who stumbled deserves our immediate condemnation. Of course, we have a habit of experiencing negative emotions. The point is that there is no benefit from them. Therefore, if we see someone else's mistake, we should try to correct it so that this mistake cannot harm the common cause.
But what if a person higher in the hierarchy doesn't understand me or doesn't want to listen?
Tara asked.
Then it's worth discussing the situation with someone higher than them. They can choose the right words or help with advice on how to correct the situation. After all, if you want to change something for the better, you should rely on constructive action and a positive, creative state, not on your emotions.
The master's words deeply touched the hearts of the listeners, and they seriously pondered them, determined to change their ugly stereotypes and redirect energy not towards condemnation, but towards sincere help to others. Next to Voice's question was Ted, a disciple around 40, sitting with his elbows on his knees, leaning forward significantly. His posture revealed internal tension that seemed burdensome for him. The Keeper of Knowledge harmonized the disciple's state with his energy, perfectly seeing its cause and eliminating possible consequences.
Master, please tell me how to work energetically when raising another person?
He began his question in a quiet voice, but then started speaking a bit louder.
You nurture and grow your disciple, and they reach your level? What happens with the energy here? Do you also grow, or does the disciple become equal to you?
If we try to make someone better, to elevate them to our level, it requires tremendous effort.
The Keeper of Knowledge replied deliberately, trying to speak in a way that all his listeners would understand.
And first of all, it's a significant self-improvement work, because raising someone's spiritual level is not easy at all. It requires a lot of effort, understanding why they are not progressing, figuring out how to help them start progressing. To do this, you need to find the right keys, constantly remind them of something, push them towards grasping the truth.
Working on the development of others, do we always grow ourselves?
The man asked, surprised by the keeper's answer.
Of course, the most significant work in teaching others is the development of oneself. If we do this work, the person moves to our level, and as a result, we also rise higher because of it. But we can never ascend to a higher level until we understand how to bring another person up to our level.
Master, when I think that I'm not growing spiritually, is it my ego manifesting itself? Or is it just self-doubt and lack of belief in my abilities? What does it mean?
Ted asked, somewhat embarrassed by his question. He was amazed at how easily he could ask the Keeper of Knowledge the most sincere questions, as he wasn't accustomed to solving personal situations in public.
It's very helpful to think that I'm not growing spiritually,
he began thoughtfully.
Because if a person thinks about their rapid growth, how much they have already grown, and compares themselves with others, it shows their selfishness. And such a spirituality only contributes to strengthening selfishness. Then this egoism manifests through megalomania. A person starts considering themselves better than everyone, more spiritual than everyone. But what if, on the contrary, I believe that I'm not growing spiritually at all?
Ted persistently asked, trying to look the master directly in the eyes, which was not easy, as the keeper skillfully dosed the flow of emitted energy.
More often than not, the understanding that a person is not growing spiritually serves as an excellent stimulus to develop and move forward. However, it should not be an excuse for one's helplessness, but rather deep, internal repentance. In this case, there is exposure, and conscience awakens. Acknowledging to oneself that you are standing still gives us the impulse to truly reconsider and start growing spiritually. So there is nothing bad in your thoughts.
The master smiled and fell silent for a moment. He wanted to make sure that his words were heard by everyone. Looking around the hall, he confirmed that many disciples were disarmed by his sincerity, and tears of repentance streamed down their cheeks. Then he continued,
and each of you should think that I am spiritually growing little, not growing spiritually enough. Investing energy in every word,
the master said,
but only not for the sake of letting your hands down. If you constantly scold yourself for not growing spiritually fast enough, there will be an impulse for development. But there may also be depressive moods, apathy, pessimism. That's the wrong state.
So, self-criticism is beneficial, but only within reasonable limits,
Ted said. trying to comprehend the words of the wisest and pass them through his heart.
It should help us activate, serve as a stimulus for activity, zeal, and diligence, to finally start growing and developing.
No one would recognize the Ted who started speaking a few minutes ago. Every interaction with the Keeper of Knowledge gave him strength and energy. He became more and more convinced of the value of observation and the boundless wisdom of the Keeper. Encouraged, Ted dared to ask another question.
"Master, can one still somehow assess their development?"
he asked.
"How to understand if I am growing or not growing spiritually?"
"You should constantly think about your spiritual growth,"
the Keeper began his answer in a measured tone.
"But at the same time, the self-assessment must be correct. Even if spiritual changes are noticeable to yourself and others, you must always think that I am growing slowly, not growing enough, as would be possible. And you must make every effort to grow faster, because self-criticism is an excellent motivation that makes you move forward."
Or perhaps, reasoning about one's spiritual growth is pointless, and one should just take action?
Tara asked with a firm voice.
"After all, you see your imperfections and mistakes throughout the day. Wouldn't it be better to just work on them instead of trying to evaluate your spiritual growth compared to yesterday?"
She sat up straight, appearing even taller, stretching her neck to get a better view of the Keeper, trying to catch every word and emotion. The Master responded immediately.
"If you don't think about your achievements at all, you may fall into despair,"
the Keeper replied seriously.
"Then your hands may drop. Negative thoughts will constantly come. If I'm not growing, then everything is bad. This is not my path. I'd rather continue to degrade, drink myself to death, decay. And this is already the position of an egoist, where the most important place in a person's heart is occupied only by his own personality."
"But if considering any effort, any sign of spiritual growth as one's merit, is this also a manifestation of selfishness?"
Ted objected.
"Of course, and that's also a wrong perspective,"
the Master confirmed his suspicions.
"That's why the right mindset is crucial. When a person sees their spiritual growth but considers it insufficient, tell yourself, 'Yes, I am growing little. So today I will make even more effort, develop even more actively.' That's the right self-assessment."
The words of the Keeper of Knowledge infused the listeners with vigor and confidence in the coming days. They finally understood how to relate to themselves and assess their spiritual growth. Curly-haired Mary raised her hand. During the conversation, she frequently changed her posture, so absorbed in the discussion that she even occasionally jumped in her chair. Her face vividly expressed the range of emotions she was feeling. Now, she couldn't sit still. Swiftly shifting her gaze between the Keeper and the others, who had turned in her direction and were ready to listen attentively, she began speaking quickly and unevenly, struggling to control the rush of emotions, at times faltering, trying to hold back the flood of emotions, and at other times beginning to babble.
"Master, I understand that for development, it's important to have the right assessment of one's achievements, and the correct reactions in challenging situations are an indicator of growth. But it often happens that negative reactions, acknowledging one's imperfections and mistakes, become a habit and start manifesting mechanically."
She paused for a moment, but then continued very quickly.
"I still don't quite understand what constitutes real growth and what rather belongs to unrefined mechanics."
The Master listened to Mary with special attention. When she finished, he nodded understandingly and seemed to envelop the observant disciple with his energy, harmonizing her state. Then he began to explain.
"It's essential for the understanding of one's imperfection to manifest not only externally, but also internally. Because a person can externally acknowledge their mistakes, say, 'I'm at fault, I'll correct myself,' but internally grumble, feel displeasure. In the end, there will be no result because the internal reaction is incorrect. It's best when a person simply observes the situation from the outside, analyzes their internal reactions as an outsider would." That's when it's possible to get an objective assessment of one's own actions. That's when real growth can occur.
Elegant Diana joined the conversation. She was one of the few who had chosen the path of truth several years ago. Since then, she had covered a tremendous distance in her spiritual development and understood a great deal. Her age was impossible to determine, and no one attempted to do so. Among the disciples of the Keeper of Knowledge, age signified maturity and spiritual beauty. She began from a distance to express her thoughts as comprehensively as possible.
Master, you say that true development should come from conscience and understanding of one's imperfection and insufficient development.
She began.
And how should one approach the desire to become better than others and constantly compare oneself with others? It seems that if I want to improve, become better and better on one hand, it motivates me, like competition. But on the other hand, doesn't it nurture my ego?
The master had been waiting for this question from her, so he responded immediately, without hesitation.
Yes, the ego will develop if a person seeks to achieve some results,
he said.
But often people start doing everything not genuinely, but only to show off. The ego, of course, swells from this, but valuable internal changes do not happen. And often such a person doesn't even think about internal changes. It's more important for them to show themselves externally, to let others see how developed they are, to feel superior to others.
I know a person who wants to show everyone their spiritual development so much that they try to sing and recite mantras louder than anyone else,
Diana added. Her words brought laughter from the audience, and the listeners all smiled together.
That's only harmful, with no benefit at all,
the master assured with a smile.
True development occurs when we do something not for external development, but for internal development. And of course, externally, such aspirations often look foolish. Others understand their absurdity and simply laugh at such a person.
So, the best motivation for our development is not that I'm doing something poorly compared to others, but that I'm the one doing it poorly, not someone else? And I need to understand why I allow this to happen?
Diana asked again. She was almost sure she knew the answer to her question, but still decided to ask the wisest.
Certainly,
the keeper responded with a calm smile.
If we pay great attention to our inner world, only then do we truly develop and grow. At that point, it is not selfishness that strengthens in us, not a false personality that does everything just to show off. But true spiritual development takes place.
Outside, the last rays of the setting sun had long disappeared, and dusk had settled on the land. Soft lights were turned on in the hall, and candles were lit, casting uneven shadows from people and the surroundings. The dim lights and flickering flames created the sensation that the world, full of worries and concerns, had stayed somewhere far away, and they, with the Keeper of Knowledge, were crossing the ocean of existence on Noah's Ark, clearly knowing where they were heading and why. To help the disciples better understand and feel the topic of spiritual development, the Keeper of Knowledge suggested everyone to watch a fragment from a film about Elder Gabriel. Through pain and humiliation, the main character tuned himself to spiritual development and helping others. The film sparked genuine interest and a storm of emotions among the disciples. After watching, they hurried to ask their questions so the master could clarify everything that remained unclear. The first to speak was a very young girl named Victoria, sitting close to the master.
Master, tell us, did the elder humble himself and endure pain to tune himself to the fact that he is insignificant and does too little for people? Is that right? Is it to stimulate himself so that spiritual reactions manifest?
He understood that he was developing little, Therefore, he created even more stressful conditions for his own development. Elder Gabriel deliberately provoked situations in which people criticized him rather than praised him. For example, after healing from a serious illness without waiting for gratitude, he could scold, pretend to be drunk, rude, unrestrained. Thus he sought not to relax, but to activate himself, to become better, to do more for his development. However, he did not allow himself states of depression, negative emotions, and apathy, and you should not allow your heart to be filled with gloom and your hands to drop. On the contrary, you need to activate, especially when something doesn't work out.
If something doesn't work for us, it means we need to activate and then everything will start working?
The girl asked hopefully.
Yes, more effort, more diligence, more thoughts. And you should think not about everything working out for me right now, but that I am developing, taking small steps forward.
But there is such a thin line between these states.
Diana joined the conversation again. She was excited, and her face turned red.
How not to fall into despair from acknowledging your own imperfection, but at the same time not to become proud, imagining your spiritual growth and somehow comparing yourself to others. I want to tune in to the fact that I am developing little, but sometimes I lower my hands. It seems to me that I am unworthy of development.
Admitting her own weakness was not easy for Diana, but she was a very strong person, so she did not hesitate to share her doubts with others. The great master, of course, highly appreciated such diligence and made a blessing gesture towards her. The master looked at all the disciples with a gaze full of love and magnanimity. Thus, he indicated that the answer would be for not only the one asking, but for everyone. He sincerely wished happiness and the realization of truth to each of those present. Shifting his attention to Diana, the keeper responded to her.
A person who truly develops does not pay attention to what others say about him. He goes towards achieving his goal. And those who only externally display their striving and persistence, their false personality only strengthens because there is no internal work behind external actions. And such saints, as a rule, only cause irritation. Those who pray internally and make every effort to observe themselves, to curb manifestations of negativity and strive for elevated states, they truly spiritually develop. In other words, a person who truly wants to develop internally should not pay attention to what others say and think about him, even if they consider him strange.
The bright brunette asked openly.
Yes, you understood correctly, Victoria.
The keeper supported her.
Elder Gabriel endured misunderstanding and even mockery, endured pain only to grow spiritually. But in life it can be the opposite. For example, priests. They wear golden robes, pray loudly, and everyone around reveres them as spiritual mentors, as people who have achieved spiritual development. But at the same time, the priest himself may not make any spiritual efforts to change for the better, and as a result, degrade. To reach a sublime state, it is important to work a lot and constantly on yourself. Strive to change. Analyze your actions and feelings. Only prolonged inner work leads to spiritual growth. And this is the main thing that you should start practicing after today's meeting.
The darshan was coming to an end. As tradition dictated, to conclude the meeting, the keeper recited a prayer whose words were well known to all present. The master spoke loudly, and a few hundred voices echoed him, responding with a prolonged and resonant hum. At that moment, the entire space of the temple was filled with pure energy, radiating love and understanding. After the prayer, people began to disperse, bidding farewell to the keeper of knowledge and each other. People were filled with new emotions. However, this meeting also provided each of them with food for new reflections. Typically, After the meeting, they liked to linger for a long time, discussing what they heard in small groups, sharing impressions with each other. But today, the hall was quiet enough. People left, immersed in contemplation about themselves and their attitude towards spiritual growth. They analyzed their own actions and pondered how they could show diligence, overcome themselves, and step by step, spiritually grow, eventually reaching the realization of truth. In a few minutes, the hall emptied, and in the semi-darkness next to the master, only one person remained. It was a young guy named Christian. Confusion was evident on his stern face. There were still many questions in his head, and he was eager to get answers. Throughout Darshan, he had been sitting, mentally contemplating the right formulations, but he had not dared to express them in public. The great master perfectly sensed Christian's emotional state, so he was not surprised when Christian approached him after the general meeting. Despite the late hour, the great master was ready to converse with the disciple, dispelling his fears and doubts, and helping him transition to the next stage of understanding, which is possible only after gaining complete clarity and comprehension. Bidding farewell to the disciples, the keeper descended from the pedestal and now stood not far from it, next to the first row of chairs. Christian approached him timidly, bowing his head as if apologizing for himself. However, the keeper smiled warmly at him and placed a hand on his shoulder, a sign of approval and support. Christian raised his eyes and saw the warm gaze of the sage, which gave him strength and courage to start an open conversation.
Master, today at Darshan, I was contemplating the right attitude towards spiritual development. It seems to me that the main secret lies in a person's awareness. That is, if I can analyze my own actions from the outside, to detach myself and in the third person say to myself, he failed. He is worthless, incapable of anything. Then I can work with it, correct my mistakes.
The master looked warmly and friendly at the disciple, and Christian felt his understanding and sincere desire to help. This gave him strength, so each word he spoke sounded bolder and more firm. The sage found the answer to the question immediately.
Yes, without awareness, development is impossible because a sleeping person cannot see their own mistakes.
The keeper began to explain calmly, but confidently.
They cannot see what needs to be corrected. Only when they wake up, remember themselves, become aware of their imperfections, and fully understand the need to work on them. During sleep, when we perceive everything subjectively, without attempting to analyze our behavior from the side, everything goes mechanically, as we were programmed from childhood, as we are accustomed to acting. And this is far from always correct.
After a moment of reflection, the keeper continued.
Until you wake up, you cannot even remember what I am saying now. As soon as you wake up, memories of what was said will immediately come up. You will begin to think about how to understand it correctly, what is happening to us. Immediately start seeing the situation as a whole and understand what can be done about it. And in a state of sleep, we live on autopilot and often act exactly as the sick society programmed us.
Christian clasped his hands behind his back and began to shift his weight from one foot to the other. There was a purely personal question on his tongue, one he had wanted to ask for a long time but had not been able to decide. But now, standing before the master one-on-one and feeling his support and understanding, Christian mustered the courage and quickly blurted out.
When an event is related to me, when I am its participant, any mistakes cause oppressed states in my soul. I take them too close to heart, so a weak state arises. I begin to reproach myself because it's me, the bad and incapable one.
And if you look at the situation from the outside, as if it was not you, but some false part of you?
The keeper asked, slyly smiling, demonstrating a casual attitude toward himself, but a serious attitude toward development.
Surely then you can look at things more objectively. You will also see that you failed at something, that something did not work out. But at the same time, you will be able to understand the reasons behind the mistakes you made.
And when I can understand the reasons, I can correct my mistakes and also analyze them and do everything possible not to repeat such things,
Christian said with enthusiasm and a touch of excitement. It seemed that he himself was surprised by his own boldness, but immediately his soul felt lighter. The sage observed attentively the changing state of Christian. The master smiled with a broad and open smile, then answered the question.
And this determination that arose in you, it comes precisely from looking at things objectively. Try to look at yourself and your actions from a detached perspective more often. Only then can you achieve true spiritual growth.
Christian stood with his back to the light sources, and his face was barely visible. But from his demeanor, one could notice how the young man gradually gained strength and confidence. After listening to the master, he paused for a moment, but then immediately began to speak. It was evident that he was trying to be open with the keeper, revealing his heart and soul.
Master, once you told a story about a rich man who came to Buddha and offered his help. He wanted to do something for Buddha. Buddha responded, "What can you do when you don't even exist?" Surely the rich man was offering some material help and Buddha was talking about awareness. But if the rich man had offered material assistance, does it matter whether he was asleep or awakened? What is the significance or is the essence of this story entirely different?
The topic of conversation turned out to be very interesting for the keeper of knowledge, and he began to tell the story about Buddha in detail and with emotion.
You forgot that he came to Buddha, not to some missionaries who distribute bread, loaves, or other material values. But he came to Buddha, who did not need material offerings. The visitor himself could not realize who he came to, so he acted according to the standard program, as he would have come to some kings, with material offerings. He had a chance to develop spiritually, but he was losing that chance.
So Buddha was disappointed?
Asked Christian with growing interest.
If he had said, "I want to spiritually develop, but I have some rubbish that can be given away or something to do with it," would Buddha have appreciated that?
Exactly. He needed to say, "I want to develop spiritually, help me. Buddha, what do I need to do?" Instead, he identified himself with this junk, with the material wealth he had accumulated throughout his life. And he couldn't separate his own soul from the accumulated wealth, which turned out to be trash.
Christian was so absorbed in the conversation that he didn't notice the changes happening within himself, something that the keeper of knowledge certainly did not overlook. Now, Christian stood upright, slightly tilting his head toward the master. He spoke quickly and with great enthusiasm, making wide gestures with his hands as if trying to express his thoughts and emotions on his fingers.
But he also has the nature of Buddha within him, just needs to be awakened,
exclaimed the young man. His eyes sparkled with excitement and the realization of a new truth.
He came to Buddha, and the Supreme expects that a person can change himself, not that he will distribute bread to other people and take pride in himself, considering himself a benefactor.
The master said. Calmly and thoughtfully, Christian pondered, holding his chin with his index and thumb. His gaze became distracted, directed somewhere to the side.
So Buddha was disappointed,
mused Christian aloud.
And he said, "What can you do when you don't even exist? You're asleep." Thus, he pointed out to the rich man the main thing, that he must develop himself. And in this case, it doesn't matter how much bread you give. What matters is that you are still asleep.
There is another interesting story on this topic.
The keeper wanted to explain the discussed matter in as much detail as possible, so he enthusiastically began to tell an ancient parable.
Once, a Bodhidharma came to a king. The king boasted, "Look at how much I have done for Buddhists. I built temples, rooms for monks, did so much for Buddhists." "Is my merit great?" he asked Bodhidharma, to which he replied, "You have no merit."
He said that because the king only showed external deeds, personal achievements,
guessed Christian immediately,
and there were no inner changes, he did not become more aware, did not become awakened, did not see himself realistically, did not awaken his conscience.
Yes,
the master said approvingly. He was pleased with how quickly the disciple understood the main essence of the parable and formulated it correctly.
That's why Bodhidharma said that he had no merits, because he did not take real steps for his development.
Buddha also perceived the rich man's visit as an opportunity for his inner development and enlightenment. But he never expected that the person would equate his soul with the trash that only he himself considered valuable,
Christian continued, becoming more and more inspired.
And he called him to awaken. After all, if a person could come to Buddha, then he had such an opportunity.
People are accustomed to reasoning about goodness and enlightenment from the perspective of some low-grade missionaries,
the keeper said with disappointment, even grimacing.
They believe that by distributing bread they achieve spiritual enlightenment, but in the process, they themselves do not develop. They give out bread once, people will eat, then another time, and in the end, people will remain in poverty, because none of them were developing internally during that time.
At that moment, the disciple and the master met each other's eyes, and the gaze of each expressed complete understanding. Christian felt a sense of enlightenment from the newfound understanding of another truth. At that moment, he was sincerely happy, and his aura radiated with comprehension, the greatest heavenly value that only the keeper of knowledge could help him find.
And if they could change internally, would they get out of this foolish game?
Christian immediately asked, experiencing lively interest and concern for the fate of the characters.
Spiritual development would help them get out of the game. They would stop being poor, suffering, struggling, and living their entire earthly life in search of bread. They would start their path to enlightenment and strive towards God.
Christian was filled with inspiration and sincere gratitude towards the master. The keeper warmly embraced the young man in farewell, thereby transferring to him the energy that would inspire the young man for new achievements in the pursuit of true knowledge. As Christian left, night had already fallen outside, and bright stars illuminated the park pathway with their silvery radiance, reflecting in the smooth surface of the pond like millions of bright pearls. In his mind, flashes of knowledge, conveyed with great care by the master, ignited one after another like revelations. Each of them contained colossal wisdom, something that only a soul of a very high level could understand and assimilate. Christian completely realized the importance of following the law of hierarchy. Only through that could people truly develop. Hierarchy gives birth to healthy competition. And the principle of society is that all people are on the same level. This was the main idea of communism. But as it turned out, all people ultimately became not equal, but equally foolish, equally poor, and equally zombified. Now, Christian deeply understood that inequality is by no means a violation of anyone's rights and freedoms, but rather the engine of progress, the basis of development. Only a more developed person can organize others, lead them. When all people are on the same level, society becomes disorganized. People lose the incentive to develop, and along with it, the meaning of life. And only spiritual development can help people to stop suffering, stop living like everyone else, and truly become happy. To achieve this, one must start observing oneself, trying to look at the situation as if it is not you who is acting, but some false part of you. Christian returned to the city, full of everyday hustle, worries, and petty, questionable goals. The master watched one of his disciples leave, sincerely hoping that the seed of knowledge planted in his soul would grow into a true understanding of the truth.
do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.